Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's show is sponsored by Bob's Red Mill. With natural foods, they support organic, vegan, paleo, and gluten-free lifestyles. Learn more about their commitment to good food for all at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, it's April 25th, 2017. This is our April Sour Show. We've got some good buddies here. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. Let's go around the room. Everybody introduce yourselves.
Hey, this is Stephen Vallon from Brooklyn Brew Shop.
Hey, I'm Brian Strumke from Stillwater.
Hi, it's Erica Shave, also from Brooklyn Brew Shop.
And I'm Daniel from Jolly Pumpkin Artisanal Ales.
And Ian Kyle, also from Jolly Pumpkin.
You can tell these guys aren't from New York. All right, welcome to the show, guys. April Sours, we're going to talk about sours. We're going to talk about some homebrew inspirations. And let's just cut to the chase right now. Steven and Brian, you guys, Brian's got his great beer, the Goes It Gone Wild from Stillwater. And Steven and Erica, you guys made a Brooklyn Brew Shop beer kit. Let's talk about how that idea came about.
Yeah,
kick us off talking about sours too.
So we've done a few collaborations, and we've always really liked Stillwater's and Brian's beers. And we were actually at his bar of Love and Regret in Baltimore, and we started tweeting at him, and it just kind of cascaded from there. And by the end of our dinner, before the check came, I think we had a collaboration in the works.
So even what the president does Twitter, right?
Yeah, if it's good enough for the president of the United States, then it's good enough for us.
So you guys just made the whole deal over Twitter.
And I'd say that the result of this kit is far better than most of the president's tweets.
Yeah. But so let's talk about the beer. So this is the Goes It Gone Wild. It's April Sours Month. Everybody cheers.
Cheers.
We're also tasting some Jolly Pumpkin beers.
Yeah.
And Brian, how did you come up with this recipe in the first place? Goes It Gone Wild.
This was part of the beer started. I was doing this series of a series of beer projects called the Remix Series, where I would like just swap recipes with another brewer, and we'd give our own twist to the beer, and then also even like the design, like the artist would kind of like make their own riff, and just a fun way to collaborate. So this came about when Westbrook and I did traded recipes, and I just took their basic Goza recipe and just blew it up with a lot of dry hops, Citra and Amarillo, and then fermented it with a blend of Saison yeast and Brettanomyces.
What do you guys, from Jolly Pumpkin, what do you think of this Stillwater beer?
It's fantastic.
Delicious.
Yeah.
I like to drink it.
It's definitely, it's punchful, man.
This is a different version now. I do like the name Goes Gone Wild is obviously a play on Girls Gone Wild. You know, the video series.
Can't believe I'm drinking this now.
So basically to kind of make a branch off of the series, I made the Ghost Going Wild World Tour. So I'm kind of picking like party beaches around the world to do inspiration. So this is the Phuket version. And it has
when's the Daytona Beach one coming?
Exactly. Yeah, it's going to have some smoked malt
and
some suntan lotion.
Yeah.
I'd like to see the Fire Lays Island chips. Version as well.
Yeah. The Fire Island one would be good as well.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a Tijuana version too, and that's kind of, it's like a blackberry hibiscus margarita goza.
Do people really like sours then? I mean, because you're making this fun, you put in all these different flavors, but what do you guys think of, you know, just sours in general? You guys at Jolly Pumpkin, you've always had kind of like open fermented wild yeast stuff. Tell us a little bit about your take on some beers like this.
Yeah, so what we do is everything we open ferment through primary fermentation and, you know, open top steel vessels. After we kind of get down to our gravity, we transfer into oak and just kind of allow the naturally occurring wild yeast and bacteria culture that exists in our wood and has developed over, I think we're going on 13 years now, to just kind of run wild with it.
You're running wild too.
Yeah. So we, you know, Ron really plays the, let's see what happens sort of thing. You know, he likes the magic that goes on. We don't do any sort of, you know, inoculation of what's going on. It's all just Dexter, born culture that kind of comes through. So, it's great with, you know, beers like the Gozas that are really, you know, taking off and opening up to, you know, a new branch of people that are kind of coming around. And, you know, 4 years ago, even, you know, sour beers was something that, you know, beer nerds were into, you know, and it's definitely brought it out to, you know, a very wide market now. And it's, you know, it's great. We've done, we're on our third collaboration with Brian now. We did one that came out back in the November of 2015, Pinch of Discos.
Yeah.
All my best friends are Pinch of Discos. Let's be real here. It's not just
That was fantastic.
Yeah. Really great beer.
So that's cool. So you guys have collaborated before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Brian, what, you were out February, I think, or beginning of March?
I think it was in February.
Yeah. So, and it was an IPA and a Mai Tai-inspired beer, if I remember correctly. So those are churning away
in the wood right now.
Yeah. And
they're hanging out.
Yeah.
Let's go back
to the beginning. So when I first met you, you were making saisons, you've made sours. Tell us a little about your beer making philosophy. And I know you've traveled and collaborated, but I never really asked you about like, what your philosophy of making beer is.
It's kind of like a postmodernism take. I think if I have an MO of anything, it's fusing modern techniques and modern trends and styles with traditional concepts.
And that's, you know, kind of the same thing that we like to do at Jolly Pumpkin is, you know, we like to rock the very traditional, you know, techniques as well with, you know, the modern twist on, you know, kind of upsetting the order, you know, that was established before and, you know, drawing inspiration not just from other beers, but from everything else that is enjoyed, you know, be it food or experience or time, you know, around.
Yeah, Jolly Pumpkin was actually one of my biggest influences as a home brewer and such. And I'd say definitely that I took this very similar approach as Ron did. It's more of an artistic
make good
approach.
Shit.
Yeah. Exactly. It's not worry about categories or anything. It's just, you know, worry about flavor profiles and aromas.
And Erica and Steven, so you know, what was it like working with Brian on this little project you did? And let's taste yours next to it. So we tasted Stillwater Goes Gone Wild Phuket, and let's taste your homebrew. Erica, come on. You know, you're working with Brian. You guys are working with different breweries making recipes for your beer kits.
Yeah, it's been so much fun to do the collaborations. And really, when we started off, we came up with a all-grain, one-gallon kit to get people brewing and not realize that extract existed. And now we kind of want to do the same thing with sours, and it's just like you brewed it. It's delicious. Sour beers are normal. They're delicious, and they're healthier for you, I think.
Healthy?
Yeah. It's all that good gut bacteria. It's like having yogurt.
And you guys are doing, you have spent grain recipes, you're doing food kits.
I would like to spend every day in the kitchen experimenting with different things and then teaching other people how to do it. It's my favorite part.
And then, so Stephen, tell us about
the recipe.
Is this exactly, did Brian give you his recipe or did you guys just like modify it?
That's really nice.
Yeah, we had the recipe from like the brew system that, you know, the same stuff that they look at the brewery basically, and we scaled it down and try to make it work for a kitchen stove.
Did you add the dregs from a real bottle?
We did on this one. Yeah. No, this is all. This is pretty much just lactobacillus. So kettle souring at home, same way you would at a brewery.
You're like giving them a yeast packet for the.
Yeah, so they have. The kit comes with yeast, and then it also comes with a capsule of lactobacillus that you just chop open. And just like you're making yogurt at home.
That's so cool.
And you let it sit for 3 days to actually like really get funky. Leave it covered and then do the boil. So it's full kettle souring, but at home.
And that's great because, like, you know, a lot of people, you know, I got into, you know, my first homebrew actually was with a brick and brew shop kid. And it's a great way, you know, just to have, you know, people at home are able to kind of see what's going on or it makes sense for it. They see the sour and, you know, figure out how it's kind of done as opposed to it being, you know, this crazy, elusive, magical beer. That, yeah.
And also cool. Seeing how quickly things can go wrong. Yeah. Even for that fourth or fifth day or sixth day, you know, you can see, like,
we did a lot of tests, and most of the tests were just figuring out how long it should kettle sour. Yeah. And so we had some batches that were super, super sour. We had other batches where you're getting, like, more creamed corn, and you have to, you know that you have to boil a little bit harder next time. And being able to share that with people on the smaller scale so that they can go into a brewery and, like, you know, you can go into like some like small, you know, brew pub that's trying their best, and they give you their sour, and you're like, you know what you like, and if there's something weird about it that you don't like, you're not automatically wrong.
Yeah,
but you can be more informed.
Bad either.
Yeah, exactly. It's just mm-hmm. what someone made, and so we just think that the more informed of a brewer you are, the more informed of a drinker you are.
That's great. That's so cool.
Brian, would you make a beer from one of their kits for fun? Have you ever done it?
Oh, we're gonna actually, we're gonna do one in my kitchen for the, for a video, instructional video.
You guys' instructional videos are remarkable. They're very clean,
very cut. Thank you. And like,
it teaches you exactly how to do it in 2.5 minutes or whatever it is. It's fantastic.
Cheers. Yeah, and Brian alluded to pouring the dregs into your beer, which it's something we didn't do on this one, but the actual Ghost of Gone Wild does have a little bit of Brett in there, and we've been playing with the idea of actually just taking a half a bottle and basically just adding it to your fermenter, which is pretty fun, too.
You know, since we're talking about your kits, I don't usually look at websites anymore, but I went to your website, and I checked. You have these great spent grain recipes. You know, and you have food kits now, too. Tell us more about, you know, how you guys have developed as a brand.
Yeah, the spent grain recipes we were doing really from the start, and it's because if you're a brewery, you're shipping your spent grain off to a farm. Pigs love it, chickens love it, but if you live in an apartment in Brooklyn, you don't really have chickens. So I felt bad throwing it away, started drying it out, trying it in different recipes. We do spent grain banana bread, spent grain pizza, have done, like, cookies and everything else, and it's just like an extra ingredient. What?
Spent grain weed snacks.
So I said, Brian, talking to the mic. Come on. Yeah, I can see you doing that. But yeah, the I'll say some of the recipes that look good were the spent grain fried chicken.
Yeah, it was like shake and bake, but spent grain. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And
you made spent grain graham crackers.
Yeah, pretty much anything that has flour in it, you can sub in a portion of spent grain.
Really? Yeah, we have like more than 300 really good recipes for cooking with spent grain on our site.
That's amazing.
We should probably tell people more about them, but I would go as far as saying it might be the best source for spent grain recipes on the internet. So you should check it out at brooklynbrewshop.com.
Good thing I looked at your website today.
No, and it's really funny because we just actually launched a brand new website, which is why it looks so pretty. And it took a couple days to get the spent grain recipes up, and that was what on Twitter and Facebook, they were like, where's the banana bread?
It's kind of a second priority. The first priority was like making sure people could buy stuff. But on Twitter, we were just getting these comments like every few minutes, like I'm making this for like this party I'm having, like I need to know how to make like beer, chicken, and waffles. with spent grain waffles and like the spent grain chicken.
That means there's a book deal.
Yeah, where's this?
The next one.
I still don't know if enough people know about spent grain for a book, but.
Oh, you got it. And then you got it locked in. You just got to write it.
There's books, they write books about it.
At least the e-book. You know.
And tell us about your other books, because I liked your last one. You actually traveled the world with recipes.
Yeah, so we wrote two different books. The first one is Brooklyn Brew Shop's beer making book, which is 52 recipes. And the second one is called Make Some Beer. And we went around to a bunch of breweries in North America and Europe. And I mean, we're always inspired by what's on the menu, cocktails, like different beers we've had, and got to sit down with these different brewers and see what they were doing and get inspired by them. And so there's recipes from us, recipes from them, and then collaborations, which is really fun.
Daniel, you guys just popped another beer, so now we're tasting some Jolly Pumpkins.
Yes, we're having some Bam beer, which it's one of our favorite beers we have. Please drink Bam beer. we just found out it's named after Ron Jeffries, our owner and founder's dog. A really just beautiful 4.5% open fermented saison, like Ian was talking earlier, that's aged in oak barrels. The two really cool things about this beer to me, as a guy who drank it for a long time before I sold it, is the grain profile. It's super intricate. There's like six different specialty grains in here, past just Pilsner and Pale. Like, there's even Black Patent malt in here, and you can't look, you know, by looking at it, you wouldn't be like, what, there's Black Patent? But, you know, kind of emulating that idea of old maltsters where it would be floor malted and it would be the bottom stuff was dark and the top stuff was light because that's just the way it worked. So all those things in there. And then also dry hopped, which is really interesting to me.
When Ron started this when we first brewed this beer back in 2004, you know, dry hopping American, you know, sour and wild ales wasn't much of a thing.
I don't know if there
yet,
was farmhouse ales at that point, really. In America, at least.
And, you know, we don't, you know, put it out there a whole lot with it, but it's just kind of something that was, you know, the old techniques, you know, melding with the new and doing something different with it. So,
cool. Beautiful. Well, toast to that. We're going to take a short break.
Yeah, cheers.
Back in a few minutes, gang. On Beer Sessions. All right. Woo!
Bob's Red Mill has been milling whole grains since 1978. One of the nice things about Bob's Red Mill is it's the only that I know of national supplier that's easily available for lots of interesting, hard-to-get grains and other seed products. So, you know, before Bob's Red Mill became widely available, you couldn't go get something like quinoa very easily, or you couldn't go get spelt easily in small quantities. But now you go to any one of the huge number of stores that carry Bob's Red Mill, and you can get smaller amounts of these really interesting, fun things to play with. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. This is a wild show. We're talking about spent grain, pot cookies, and this is the sour beer show, by the way. Yeah, but we got all our good buddies here, and
sour beer likes to party.
That's right. So we're tasting what, the Jolly Pumpkin, what, Bam beer?
Yeah, we're having some Bam beer here.
I'll have some more of that if you don't mind.
Yeah, it's right over there.
Let's talk about style. So,
what a delightful treat. Huh?
You know, for me, Jolly Pumpkin is a special brewery. Yeah, like you were saying. Way back, not too long ago, they were like the only kind of open,
like when you think
fermented
about like the scope
farmhouse
of humanity. Yeah, it's not that long ago, but when you think about a lot of craft beer, you know, this is back in 2004 when Ron was doing this stuff. It was revolutionary at the time, and you know, that's definitely what like led me to work for the brewery. Was, you know, working for bars in Chicago and Milwaukee and stuff like that. We would pour this and it'd be like, "What is this odd? What is this odd elixir?" You know, and then to have it now be just part of the, you know, the scope of beer in general. It's a remarkable thing.
And Brian, when did you first get turned on to Jolly Pumpkin? Let's talk about when we first met. I remember like 2009. You had your first beers were like saisons.
Yeah.
And let's go back a little bit.
I guess with Jolly Pumpkin, it was probably shortly after they came onto the scene. As soon as Shelton Brothers started. Yeah. Distributing their beers, because I know like at the very beginning I had some of the first batches of Jolly Pumpkin and they weren't sour and they weren't funky.
Yeah, they were just Belgian style beers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they shifted.
Yeah.
And they were amazing. And it was really it was especially an eye opener for American brewing, because It was one of the more authentic Belgian style beers, but at the same time, it wasn't authentic at all, and it wasn't really Belgian. It was American, and it was wild. And it was kind of like Ron is the godfather of American wild ales.
Yeah. I always feel bad saying that since I work for him. That I feel like it's almost like sycophantic, but it's also true. Like, just as a beer guy first, like, it's a remarkable thing to kind of see a lot of that influence kind of spread out and, like, you know, buying your beers too, you know, like, in that same time. Like, you were pushing that same boundary, and it was, you can definitely see the people that Ron collaborates with are people that have also done that kind of next wave sort of thing. It's really important.
Ryan, what has it been like for you collaborating with Jolly Pumpkin?
It's been great. Ron and I have, you know, developed a really, you know, really tight friendship over the past few years. What did you bring?
You guys telling secrets? Come on.
We have something. We have to do
that. You have a surprise. Keep talking, Brian.
Oh, it's nothing good. It's nothing that interesting. I promise.
It's not weed snack.
Yeah. Well, actually.
We flew in. One so.
Let me tell you about what Ian found in Washington Square Park or whatever it was. Like, what'd you get? You got to treat something.
Welcome to New York, boys.
It's been really interesting. It's because Ron's been such an influence on me. It's kind of challenging to collaborate because it's almost, we do have a similar view when it comes to brewing. So in order to it's hard to kind of find a different, you know, the things that really distinguish us. Ourselves.
Yeah. Jim Barnes, you're the Shelton Brothers rep.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Give us your take on Jolly Pumpkin. You also have them in town. You've done some events.
Yeah. Yeah. They're one of these brewers that somehow only Dan Shelton could find in the middle of Michigan. And he just, that's what he does. That's what has been doing. And that's what's helped shape Shelton Brothers and their whole portfolio, taking chances and saying, "This is wild beer. We need to see more of this." And so, Jolly Pumpkin is certainly one of those beers that Dan sought out, and it's been an institution. I know as long as I've worked for Shelton Brothers,
Van Beer, Calabaza, yeah, Blanca,
exactly.
Oh, the Calabaza.
Yeah, I mean, the best part of hearing about, you know, the foundation and what got Jolly Pumpkin going was, prior to Ron, you know, starting Jolly Pumpkin, he was working at another brew pub in the area that we were at, and Dan came by with one bottle of Cantillon, and, you know, I was talking it up, and, you know, we have this very special beer. It's out of Belgium. You know, it's this sour wild ale, and, you know, Ron likes to go, "All right, let's try it," and Dan's like, no, I have one bottle. This is what I got, like, you know, just presenting it for you guys. And that mystique that came with it, you know, led to, you know, Ron kind of seeking it out. And the relationship with that, with Ron and Shelton especially, started prior, before we were even, Jolly Pumpkin was even around. So that when Jolly Pumpkin, you know, when we were in, Shelton Brothers was the only choice.
Great.
And really, you know.
No,
we
I
owe a lot to Shelton as well,
guys,
for our existence and where we're at. So.
Let's talk about some other, since we're talking about sours, some sour styles that you really like that inspire you. Brian, the first sours that you were making. And Steven, and any sours that you've written about in your books.
Yeah, man, I can tell you about the first sour we had, which was actually at Cantillon. So like before
that,
yeah, so you might have heard of them, but before Eric and I like started this company, we went on a backpacking trip to make sure that we still liked each other at the end of the 8 weeks. And this was when we were brewing, you know, as we would think, as you can call regular beers. But we went to Cantillon and we really just had no idea. And you do the tour and you get the pamphlet that's in like three languages. Then they give you the beer at the end and you're like, "This is the coolest place in the world." Then they give you the beer and we're like, "Look," and we drink it and we look at each other. And this is honestly the first sour beer we've ever had. And we're like, I think something's wrong. And
when was this?
This was in like 2007.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
I have a story about that. In 2006, from Shelton Brothers also, at Jimmy's number 43, we had a keg of Cantillon Goose. And back then, the same thing. We had it on, didn't move. It took 3 weeks to move that keg. 2 years ago, the last time we had a keg of Canteon Goose, it moved in 3 hours.
Yeah.
So, you know, something's happened in the last, you know, 10, 12 years. I don't know if anyone wants to talk about that.
We want the funk.
Yeah.
That's a great one. And then, come on. This is Brian's associate girlfriend here. So. What's your name? Come on.
I'm Bryn. Same thing's happening in the wine world, though. People embracing particularly Brettanomyces and weird, funky flavors and things that smell like feet.
Yeah, and that's
natural
what I
fermentation
ask
is huge.
People are into it. It's not a bad thing.
So part of it is natural fermentation, Daniel?
Yeah, I think so, right? I mean, a lot of those natural wines, yeah, it's like letting it be.
And it's kind of uninterfered and sometimes for the worse and sometimes for the best.
Yeah, it doesn't mean it's going to be good. It's just going to be something.
It's going to be honest.
That reminds me, there's like in Best Pizza, there's all these paper plates that have little crayon or marker sketches. Yeah. And one of them is a picture of a can of Four Loko. And it says, it does a lot of things, but it doesn't lie.
So this is Brian's bringing in uppers and downers. Yeah. I love this. And Erica, anything else about sour beers you want to tell us?
I mean, I love sour beers, and it's been really fun to turn people onto it because, I didn't actually like beer until I started making it and then fell in love with beer and all different styles. But for people who don't think they like beer, often I'll give them a sour, and they're like, I didn't know beer could be like this.
It's acidity is such a huge part of the human palate. That, you know, it's like as growing up, I mean, we love fruits and candies. So we put acid in all kinds of cooking, in order to to draw us in and to satiate our appetites.
And Stephen, you travel a lot, and it's amazing. So you said you were just in Scandinavia. Tell us an observation you had about bottle shops and sour beers.
Yeah, we were just did a trip to Stockholm and Copenhagen, and what we found in Stockholm is basically in Sweden, you can't sell beer over 3.8% in any store other than the Systembolaget, which is the state-run liquor store. Yeah, or New Hampshire, even. And so it's pretty, huge... it's a thing to overcome if you can't make beer that's over, basically 3.8%. So all these bottle shops are now popping up in Stockholm, like 4 in the past 7 months, all really proud of the fact that they can only serve 3.5, typically, is what they mostly do. So you have like Folk and Friends, you have Folk Ules Boutiquen. So Folk Ule means basically a session beer. It's a low alcohol beer.
Yeah, we just made a version of our Tropic Punch Ale that I do with Dugas in Sweden called Tropic Folk, and we want to do a version called Tropic Folk. I'm like,
store called Folk and Friends. You're like, why? I don't understand this. Like, folk is this folk music? Do they really like it in Stockholm? But then you go into these stores and they've a really good selection. And I accidentally, before I kind of fully realized this, I walked away with like a ton of beer, and I got home and I was like, they're all 3.5%. What the heck? And they're all basically, their shelves are just full of sours and like some session beers, but mostly sours. And you're getting some really weird stuff with like alternate berries, kind of the same food culture that's taken over Scandinavia, with like foraging has taken over the beer scene there. So we got something with something I think loosely translates to pigweed.
And why not?
Yeah, we got another beer by...
There you go, Brian. Spent grain and pigweed.
Yeah. Yeah, we got another beer by Bracaria that's soured with sourdough.
So let's go like to the basic sours for drinking.
Like cross beers?
Let's go back to some of the basic sour beers like Berliner Weiss, the simple sours like from Peekskill, the original Gozes from Germany. They're all very low alcohol, talking about that, and they seem to be refreshing. Does anyone want to take a stab at the origins of these styles of beers? The lighter, easier drinking.
We're all chomping at the bit. Like history.
I mean, I think it was just where things came from. I mean, beer was originally low alcohol, and most beer was sour.
Yeah, there wasn't really a choice on it. It's actually something I think that we got away from.
Yeah,
and it's a return to, the norm, or what was.
Beer as we know it now, it's modern beer. Mm-hmm. It's just, you can call it as traditional as you want, and it's only traditional back to a certain date.
Yeah. One thing that was kind of counterintuitive is when we started making Gosas, we were looking at like the Leipzig Gosa, which and
the Scherbanov one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we were thinking like, okay, you have to do like various like souring methods and making Gosa like a traditional way. And then we learned that Leipzig actually had the world's first lactic acid factory making commercial lactic acid.
Yeah.
And so it was actually the very first like it was an engineered beer for more than 100 years. So we were trying to do all of this stuff to like create this like natural beer to recreate tradition that we then learned was a very
food
modern beer for its time.
Pick it up at your local supermarket.
Yeah. That's right. We got a little history in there. We're going to take another short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Hey, like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
Hey, 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 howdy, everybody. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. You can become a member. There's a lot of member benefits. In fact, just a couple weeks ago, one of our hosts, Kathy Ure, was hosted at the Threes Brewing Pop-Up in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. So a lot of cool things are happening. I know Brooklyn Brew Shop is a member, and thanks for doing that, guys. But you mind saying, you guys joined as a member last year. Was that good for you, for your business? Is that something you were interested in?
Yeah, we joined because every time we listen, we learn a ton. And we know that there's a lot of people out there that really get a lot of value out of listening to this show. And like Kathy Irway, we were friends with her. We love her. Ferment About It. There's a lot of great stuff on this station.
And I really respect what you guys have done, too. So, like, talking about your spent grain recipes and your food. Tell us a couple of the food kits besides beer kits that you make.
Yeah, so we launched
cinnamon raisin bagel.
We did. We came out with a new line called Farmsteady, and they're DIY food kits, urban gardening concepts, and it's really to just connect people to their food the same way that we're connected.
If I make the bagel kit, though, how do I get the hole in the bagel?
Oh, you wrap it around your hand. So it's really fun. They're kits, but you still do it from scratch. And so you're letting the dough rise, you're forming it, you're boiling it with some malt syrup to get that actual crusty chewiness. It's the only time we ever use malt syrup is in bagel making and pretzels. And then you bake it. And so we do a cinnamon swirled bagel and an everything bagel kit, also soft pretzel and then cheese.
Yeah, with the bagels, you actually culture your own cream cheese.
Yeah, overnight.
Dude.
And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really
does that
it's
make it less fattening? Does it make it better?
When you are making it home, because of like the nature of making something handmade, you can actually use whole milk rather than half cream and half milk, which would be like another way you could do it. So you actually can make a lighter cream cheese that will be just as fluffy as
and
probably
tangy.
Fluffier than the brick.
Cream cheese is so delicious that you don't really think like, oh, cream cheese could be better. Fresh, like homemade cream cheese, fresh cultured cream cheese is so much better, and it's so easy. And after making beer for so many years, and like you gotta wait 4 weeks, minimum of two, if you're force carbonating something, and to make fresh cheeses where you get to eat it the same day, you're like, oh.
Ian, so you said you've tell us about the beer kits, because you said that was the first batch of beer you made was from the Brooklyn Brew Shop.
Yeah, like my homebrewing career is not very long or illustrious.
I didn't plant that. The first thing he said when he came around earlier was that was the first time I made beer.
Yeah, but like the great thing I think about the kits is it really takes like the intimidation factor out of it. You know, it opens up, you know, for people. And that was what made it, you know, for me, you know, going into it, it was like, hey, this is something. You know, even with a limited amount of knowledge, you know, with a, you know, a lot of interest in the beer, but going into it, you know, it can seem like, you know, you're jumping into the deep end. And I think the kits really do a good job, you know, and really allowing you to create a quality, you know,
finished product from it in a very simple, easy to understand. You don't have to be a scientist or a chemist, and you know, I think it's great.
And then let's go back to sour beer styles. We're talking about Blue Novices and Gozas. You know, are all sour beers easy to make? Are they harder to make? He wants to weigh in on that, Ryan.
I think it's just different. It's just another technique. There's various ways to go about it. I think one of the popular ways now for sours, quick sours, or it's a kettle souring technique, or it's like a pre-fermentation of the wort with lactobacillus, which is a bacteria, same as that's in yogurt and cheese.
And sauerkraut.
And kraut.
Yeah. Sauerkraut.
I'm doing sour beer at Two Roads that's soured with yogurt. We just throw non-fat, live cultured yogurt into the beer and let it sour for a couple days.
Have you tasted it yet?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Is it? What's it going to be called, do you know?
That one's called Insetto. It's going to be like dry hopped and has Italian plums at it.
Wow. So there's also people add fruit for sour beers. The barrel aging. Jim, you know, you guys have a bunch of different sours, you know, other than Cantillons and Lambics. Oh, what are some others that you have?
Well, some of my favorite beers are from a Swiss brewery in the Jura Valley in Sainte-Croix of Switzerland, Brasserie Trois Dames. And they make some fantastic beers, whether it's barrel aging or doing secondary fermentation with fruit. And one of my favorites is the Saison Framboise. And it's a sour saison and secondary fermented with raspberry. They also blend saison yeast with grape must from the local grapes. So there's local Pinot Noir grapes from the local wineries, along with the Schutzlass grapes. So they do that that blended fermentation of the grape must with their saison yeast strain, and those come out fantastic. So that's one of my preferred places, Trois Dames.
And Dan, for you guys at Jolly Pumpkin, are there some European sour beers that inspire you besides Cantillon?
Well, Ron, I think, takes a lot of different inspiration from a lot of different breweries. I'd say a lot more recently has been kind of looking at, this is my point of view, is that he's kind of looking at a lot of more modern breweries that are around and kind of seeing what they've done to innovate in different ways and taking inspiration from that. I mean, of course, you know, he has his breadth of knowledge of classic brewing, but I wouldn't say there's one specific place where he's looking to there. But, you know, hang out with Brian, hang out with, like, Henry from Monkish, hanging out with, you know, all these other guys, the guys from Holy Mountain, you know. Yeah. He's looking forward, you know.
Steve, what makes people go from, you know, to funky and to sour? Because we put out an email this Saturday at Jimmy's number 43. There's an April Sours event on April 29th. And a woman said, I got the email, but I don't really like sours. You know, and there's some people that definitely don't want sours, but everyone who's cool is asking for sours.
Yeah.
So what makes that jump, you know, that people want the funky?
I think
the cool people want funky.
I think the cool people live in Brooklyn, so it's easy. New York is a totally different market than the rest of America, so I can only speak to what I know here, but a lot of it is touted as natural or healthier options. It doesn't have additives. A lot of wine people are obsessed with the word sulfite, which I'm not even going to start down that road. But if you're not adding things to your wine, people can feel better about it. There's a whole like weird company in California that will distribute like a box of wine to you monthly that like is okay to eat on the keto diet.
Oh shit!
But like a lot of it has to do with like being quote unquote better for you. But the truth of the matter is, it's alcohol. That's up to you if it's good for you or not.
It's fun.
Yeah, but like the funk, I think people embraced it because they liked the ideology behind it.
Steve,
I mean, I think people like knowing how to talk and think about what they're drinking, and when you add a word like sour and like, there, it just becomes so much more approachable. Like people understand sour and tart, and there's just it kind of opens up your vocabulary in non-beer ways that you can drink it, and you just you can recognize it in so many things that you've tasted in your life. And it's just, I think it's more approachable as a non-beer drinker than it may be for a super beer drinker.
Ryan?
And that, yeah, that's due to the acid. You know, it's like we grow up.
A lot of things are due to the acid.
why is his microphone melting?
Very true. But I mean, think about it. I mean, all the beverages, I mean, sodas, soft drinks, everything is
super acidic.
Yeah,
like crazy acidic.
Exactly. I mean, sour beers, there's nothing new about sour beers. At all. Nothing new to the palate, and it's nothing new to beer making either.
Yeah, I think it just kind of follows the trend of, you know, food and consumables as general. You know, the last, you know, number of years, people have kind of been going back to, you know, not eating, you know, four things or drinking one thing, or, you know, just, you know, that they want a whole breadth of what they're doing, that they want more choices, and they want to know what's going on with what they're putting in their body. I think that kind of is starting to catch up with beer as well. So
and you're actually seeing them on menus, where before you got the one person with a bottle of Cantillon, or you were on the tour, but it's just that you can actually order it off a menu, where before there wasn't those opportunities.
Or was that, you guys were Jolly Pumpkin. That was like,
and Jolly Pumpkin, you guys were in you've been in New York City, went to Owl Farm, you're going to tours tonight.
Nice.
Yeah.
What are some of the sour beers that you notice on tap at Owl Farm? Because they have a pretty great lineup of beers.
To be perfectly fair, I think we had 12 taps there, so it was us.
I don't know if you guys have heard about this place called Stillwater.
So there was the 12 taps, us, and a few other things there. But I think we're pretty much just hanging out there. We've been drinking a lot of Jolly Pumpkin.
12 Jolly Pumpkin on tap.
Yeah, at Owl Farm.
And then, Brian, like in Baltimore, your place is called Of Love and Regret.
Yeah.
How many lines on that system are sour? I mean,
I don't know.
Average.
They rotate because we always have pretty much whatever is available for me. And in the past year, I really went pretty hefty on sour. Yeah. So I don't know. Anywhere from 8 to 12 at a time sometimes.
Yeah,
and I think that, you know, the demand's getting there that most places now are at least doing one sort of sour, be it, you know, a quick kettle sour, or, you know, even if they just have, you know, one or two barrels that they're putting sour beer in, you know, that the demand's there enough that a lot of places, you know, are coming around to it. So
yeah, I have four taps at the restaurant I'm opening tomorrow, and one of them's a sour beer.
And what's the name of that place?
Let's plug it.
It's called Chez Ma Tante, which is French for at my aunt's house.
And then where's that?
That's in Greenpoint at 92 Collier Street.
Say the name one more time.
Chez Ma Tante.
Wow. Are you a server or manager?
I'm the general manager.
You're the hot shot. Come on.
Yeah. It's just me.
So what's your program? So you've got a mix of what? Beer, wine, cider, liquor?
Yeah, we have 17 wines available by the glass and the bottle. All under $70, and classic cocktails only, and then four Stillwater beers, and Guinness, and a Goza.
One thing I love about the show is that sometimes the most unlikely people, we didn't know anything about you, and now you're here on the show with us.
Oops.
And you're our best guest. Come on. And wrap it up, what do you think of these guys? So tell us about your take on the Jolly Pumpkin, the beers that we tried tonight.
Oh, I love these beers. So I actually am not into beer at all. And I didn't know that's what Brian did when we got together. Sorry, babe. I'm very strongly a wine person. But I've learned a lot, and especially Brian makes beers.
She has a wine cork tattoo.
Yeah. Brian makes beers that that are towing the line between what beer and wine or beverage of the adult variety is. And I think I found it easier to approach sour beers actually first. Appreciating the acid and not so much of the effervescence, and kind of understanding that as a natural wine lover too.
Well, that's cool. So we're going to Torst after this.
Yeah.
And then how far is your new place from Torst?
Oh, not far at all. I think it's like maybe half a mile. Not
like
even
the cool green corner. And Jimmy, what are you guys serving tonight?
It's not open tonight. That's why I'm here.
Well, we're gonna crash tonight.
We will. What's on tap at Torst tonight?
Well, we got there'll be a number of beers. There'll be the usual classics here, be it the Bam beer or the Weizen Bam. I'm not exactly sure, but I know there'll be some special collaborations they did. I don't know if you guys want to talk about it with Monkish and Holy Mountain.
Yeah, what do we have about this?
Apocalosimposis, which is a really light and soft, jammy saison with blackberry and lime that we did. We aged it in oak for 7 months total. But the last 2 months was when we kind of put in that blackberry and lime, let it re-ferment a little bit out. Didn't let it take to complete dryness on it, so you still have some sweetness that kind of comes through. You get a lot of blackberry, some notes of blueberry, tobacco, vanilla, you know, delicious, crushable beer. And, you know.
And it's also like, what, 4.3%? So yeah. It's one of those beers that you have and you forget you had it. Well, where did I have another one? That sounds great.
And it's pretty.
And it's beautiful. It's a bright purple color. And then are we going to have the Holy Mountain one there too, I believe, which is a very dry hop Jolly Pumpkin beer.
Sour barrel-aged IPA.
Which is killer. It's really good stuff.
Hey, what about, does anyone have a favorite sour beer and food pairing?
Ooh. Well, actually, I'll give one to you right away because we had that Calabaza Blanca earlier, which is one of our beers, a Belgian wit beer. So it has the orange, it has the coriander, has that barrel age, has that wild, you know, Dexter yeast and the barrel culture. And it is the best beer with oysters. It's one of those iconic pairings to me. And again, I talk about, you know, before I worked for the company drinking the beer. A restaurant I used to run the beer program for out in Chicago, it had one of like one or two dedicated lines was always for Calabaza Blanca because that beer with oysters was just beautiful. The little bit of salinity from the beer matches with the oysters. That kind of rich, you know, I reticent to say umami, but that kind of, you know, oyster taste, which is oysters, gets cut through with the acid. The orange peel and the coriander lift up some of that brine, you know, specifically West Coast oysters. I always say, you know, it helps West Coast oysters. It stands with East Coast oysters, and Gulf oysters are unhelpable. but it was always a treat, you know, a true treat. But then also, you know, you think of some things like in Belgium, you have a Cantillon Goose with, you know, the rabbit and cream sauce, those kind of things where, like, it cuts through some of that rich flavor and the, you know, dense spice of a you know, fresh rabbit kind of thing.
Brian, do you have one?
I like Gozaritas. I've been doing. So I've been taking one of my Gozas, especially the Phuket version with a shot of mezcal.
Is that what Bren's been teaching you?
A little bit of lime.
And nachos. We drink a lot of cocktails.
Are you doing any beer and beer cocktails at your new place?
Yeah, eventually we'll probably have. I was thinking about actually. I like the Phuket with mezcal a lot.
That sounds awesome.
It's fantastic. Like, we really wanted to do it with Tijuana, obviously, for mezcal purposes, but we only had Phuket at the house, and it's better. It's
so what
really
do you
good.
Do? You just mix the two together?
Probably two ounces of mezcal, ice, and Phuket with a lime wedge. It's perfect.
That sounds killer.
Yeah.
That sounds really good.
Yeah, where's the mezcal?
Yeah, somebody
go back to my apartment. We're going to wrap it up. Steven, anything you want to say about your new beer kit or any projects you have going on?
Yeah, I mean, you can pick it up at brooklynbrewshop.com. It's really cool. It's also really pretty. I recommend you check it out on the website. Brian, that worked out some really nice new bottles for the Gosgon Wild, so we incorporated all the new artwork, and it's really nice to look at. It'd be a joy to have on your shelf, I'd say.
Yeah.
All right. It's great having you guys. Any final words from anybody?
Well, I have a question. What, like, because the old Ghost Gone Wild label was awesome. Very provocative, very little sexy. And then the new one has this kind of more modern look to it. Is it the same artist? Was it kind of...
Yep. We transitioned I'm working with a new artist now. And that was... it was just... I don't know. It felt like it was time to change everything over.
Sure.
Yeah, I had schizophrenic identity for a bit. So, sure. So anything that stuck around, we had to, like, I don't know, refreshing. We've been around for 7 years, so it's time to.
Never so often.
Erica, anything new?
No, and it's so much fun to, because we'll talk beer back and forth, and then the artist will talk art back and forth, and it's the same type of passion and having breweries that appreciate that, and it's just like. Exactly what we love.
My last question for Ian. So, Ian, you know, one thing I always liked about Jolly Pumpkin beer is that there's sourness to it, but they're so well balanced and they're so refreshing. You know, there's not like one note. It they're very complex, but you know, great beers.
Yeah, I mean, we like depth and flavor, and we like to be able to drink more than one of them. So you know, it's our ultimate goal is soft, drinkable, interesting beers, and you know, I think that's something that you know everyone, whether they understand it or not, really does appreciate. And I think that's kind of the way it's going for people. Are you know, kind of over that hit you in the mouth sort of phase of craft beer, and people are getting back to, you know, stuff that they can really enjoy. So that's what we like to do.
I want to thank all my studio guests for joining me tonight. A couple of shout outs: Jimmy's number 43, April Sour's coming up, and a new event we're putting together called the Great Brooklyn Grill Out will be happening May 27th in Brooklyn. cookoutnyc.com. Big shout out to Justin Kennedy, our producer, intern Hillary Fazen, engineer David Tadashore, and thanks for listening. See you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
Cheers.
Thank you.
Howdy.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.